Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and in this podcast, we offer expert advice so you can have an amazing sex life. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com, where you will find our complete podcast archive, a wealth of free resources, as well as our premium online multimedia courses. Get started by heading to pleasuremechanics.com/free for our free mini courses where we deliver our best advice straight to your inbox. It is a great way to jumpstart your sex life in this new year or whenever you're listening. All right, on today's episode, we are responding to an email sent to us by a listener, and it is all about taboo fantasies. Where is the line around ethics and sexual fantasy? What is off limits and what is good to go when it comes to our interior sexual imagination? This is one of my favorite topics, and we are going to dive in by having Charlotte read the letter.
Hi, Pleasure Mechanics. Thanks for the advice you gave me last year. I'm doing better and still really enjoying your podcast, which has helped my relationship a lot. I work with a lot of lawyers who have repeatedly told me, don't put anything in an email that you wouldn't want on the front page of the New York Times. Admittedly, I am breaking that rule with this email. I had another question that might be of interest to other listeners. What makes an unhealthy fantasy? I know your show is very sex positive, which I appreciate and agree with. However, I also believe that one's thought life affects one's actions way more than people realize. Thoughts that seem very small and ineffective, like, I can do this, can make a big difference in what you actually do. Dwelling on jealousy or bitterness can change the way you talk and act. So is a fantasy about a coworker you are attracted to the first step towards an affair? Could it be? If you fantasize about your first sexual encounter as a 14-year-old, are you taking one step towards pedophilia? What about rape or incest? In your sex-positive movement, are there any lines to be drawn regarding what is positive and uplifting to think about in our sex lives? Or does truly anything go? Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
I love our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It's very thoughtful and thorough and...
And just to reassure you, when you email us, we hold it in topmost confidentiality. We never share it with anyone. And we always change people's names when we share them on the podcast. So your questions are safe with us. So anything short of a major hacker worldwide email explosion that lands all of our dirty news on the front page of the New York Times, we...
Your secrets are safe with us.
Your secrets, your questions, and your confidence, we take it very seriously. So let's dive into this. Many years back, you know, we were dealing with a lot of questions around fantasy and desire, and I realized it's really important for me to draw a very strict line when we use the words fantasy versus desire. Normally, this is used very sloppily, interchangeably, like, oh, baby, tell me your fantasies. What do you want to do tonight? But the truth is, fantasy is the realm of erotic imagination, where anything is possible, and you're using your creative imagination, this amazing human brain we have, to live in the world where there are no rules, there are no limits. You can even suspend gravity if you wish. Desire is what you want to make happen more in your real life. And why this is important is because when we have a strict boundary between fantasy and desire, we can get clear about what we really want to make happen versus what turns us on, what excites us, what is interesting simply as fantasy alone. And it turns out this is a really important thing for human beings. It's why we like action movies and horror movies and stories of all kinds. Humans have always loved fantasy and imagining experiences that go way beyond what we'd really want to experience. Think about the thrills of sitting through an action movie. You'd never really want to be in that exploding building, but watching the hero escape just by the nick of his pants can be thrilling and exciting, and it gets your heart racing. It has real physical responses to fantasy. Our bodies actually can't really tell the difference between what's happening in real life and what's happening in our mind alone. And this is one of the greatest capacities we have as human beings. And we should be able to use it in our erotic lives to excite ourselves, to get revved up, and just to explore what's possible. We've talked a lot about this, and I have a whole guide on how to fantasize that's part of the Foreplay Mastery course. And I think it's a really important skill to embrace fully, to really enjoy fantasy as part of your sex life. But this is a really interesting question, is where is the line? Where is the boundary? Is there any such thing as an unhealthy fantasy? What do you think, Charlotte?
It is such a huge and fascinating question. And of course, there's going to be a different line for all of us. And in a way, only you can determine that for yourself. But it is really important to look at your fantasies that you think might be problematic through the lens of, am I just shaming myself? Am I just being overwhelmed by sexual shame that is so prevalent in our culture? So some people have like the tiniest little bit of spanking in a fantasy and really worry that they're really mentally ill. And I feel, and
that's, they're not a feminist, or they want to hurt their wife, or they really judge themselves.
And that is absolutely not the case and is completely within the realm of safe and sane and healthy.
So I think what you're saying is it's really important to know that you can control your own fantasies, like you're in charge of what you fantasize about, and you need to differentiate between what feels exciting and thrilling for you personally and not let the police of sexual shame of our culture get in the way. And I think this is where it gets kind of sticky for people, and so we want to explore some of the most taboo fantasies. But it's really important to frame it in terms of this history of sexual shame, that people's sexual fantasies have been policed for millennia. And it's one of the main ways that culture has controlled sexuality and indeed encouraged people to think of themselves as sinful, wrong, immoral, when we don't feel immoral when we go to a horror movie and watch people get killed. But we'd never murder someone in real life. So somehow we give ourselves permission in all of these other realms, through storytelling, through movies, to fantasize and have the emotional catharsis of fantasy. But when it comes to sex, like, don't go too far, or you're immoral, but read all the horror murder stories you want. You know, it's a weird paradox that we as humans celebrate storytelling and celebrate the catharsis that comes through fantasy. But in our sex lives, we really police it and hold it at bay. And what we want to do is give you permission to fantasize freely while recognizing that, yes, your fantasies have an impact on your emotional state, on your physical state, and on your sex life. And so you get to choose what you fantasize about, how far you go in those fantasies, and pay attention to the effects they have. And one recent example of this is I used to love horror movies and action movies and apocalypse movies, like the more gritty, suffering, violence, kind of the better. I used to really love it. Charlotte's making a face because she never understood it. She was like, why would you want to watch that stuff? Why do you let it in your brain? Doesn't it get you down? And I was like, no, it feels good. It's kind of like being part of the human experience and the pathos of it and the catharsis of it. When I was sick this past year and I was in bed, I tried to watch, you know, some Walking Dead and other like zombie stuff, and I just could not get into it. And I realized that's not what my body needed at that time. I needed positivity and things that felt restorative and healthy and nourishing and wholesome. Like, I ended up watching musicals and like rom-coms and things that felt really like cozy and fuzzy.
That you don't normally watch.
That I don't normally watch. I don't normally enjoy, but that's what my body was responding to with pleasure. And now that I'm much healthier and better, I caught up on Game of Thrones and I can get back into it. And so what your body craves and what your body needs changes, and what kind of emotional experiences that you're craving changes over the course of your life. And so your fantasies might change. And I think we won't get too much into the science here, but it's really important to remember that things that happen in your head have a very real physical effect in your body. Your body responds as if they're happening to you in real life. And that means your body sets off cascades of hormones. Your muscles contract. You get aroused, which is why fantasy is fun. You can just think about sex and your genitals can respond. How cool is that? Like, that's a superpower we have as human beings, and we should be able to use it. But what that means, and I'll start with your first question, can fantasizing about a coworker lead to an affair? Yeah. Because you are priming your body to have a sexual response to that person, which means if you're in a meeting and they brush up against you, your body will be like, oh, John just touched my elbow. Like, that's a sexual thing. Like, you've already primed your system to respond in an erotic way to that person's presence. And so if there is chemistry, if there is the opportunity for that to cascade into a real life thing, fantasizing about it may reinforce that. Right?
And if you feel like you can hold those boundaries and it feels fun to you and erotic and makes your work meeting a little bit more sexy, but you feel like you can hold those boundaries clearly and just kind of enjoy the sexuality of it, then fair game. If it feels like you're getting into a risky territory, then you might want to stop those fantasies. You know, this is where you got to use your brain and have that interact with your desires and your genitals. And
yeah, and you can be even more deliberate with it. Like, say there's a boss that you feel shy and timid around. Maybe you fantasize about dominating that boss and really having that person submit to you. And that gives you a little more swagger when you walk into the meeting to negotiate your salary. That might be a power tool that you use sexual fantasy to give yourself more motivation. But what if sexually fantasizing about that person actually makes you giggly and timid and nervous around that person and awkward in real life? Probably not the best career move. So you have to know yourself and pay attention to how fantasy reacts to your body and to your real life situations. And then you can use it really effectively. So let's get into these taboo fantasies. Jack Moran, great late sex therapist, in his book The Erotic Mind, which we recommend to everyone to read, calls these troublesome turn-ons because they're really common. It turns out when you talk to people about their sexual fantasies, there are themes that emerge again and again and are super common, even though they're not things that a lot of people want to play out in their real lives. Why do they turn us on? Because they are taboo, because they are forbidden. And humans have this curiosity about the forbidden fruit, right? Like, it's in all of our literature, it's in our psyche. We want what we can't have. And these taboos are also problematized by our culture, and so they're kind of given an extra charge. And we always like those emails that's like, you know, I really like anal sex and you're so positive about anal sex, but if anal sex isn't taboo anymore, can I still enjoy it? It's like, well, yeah, you can enjoy the sensations of it, but if the taboo nature of anal sex is part of your turn-on, keep it taboo. Like, keep it naughty for yourself. But that doesn't mean you have to be ashamed about it, right? So we can play with taboo and we can play with the forbidden to keep that erotic charge alive for ourselves.
And it's important to know that, as Chris was saying, that we all at some level desire some forbidden fruit, some taboo. And fantasy is an amazing place to give yourself space to play with the taboo.
It's the safest space.
It's the safest place. So it's also interesting to like carve out that space and say, all right, like, what is taboo that I'm going to let myself explore that doesn't feel like it crosses any boundaries morally for myself?
And this is why we like action movies and thrillers and things like Dexter about a serial killer. Most of us don't want to be a serial killer. We would never go there in real life. But watching someone play that out and watching that story unfold gives us access to that forbidden. It gives us access to that world that we would never inhabit in real life. And your sexual fantasies can do the same. So let's look at the terrifying three, is what I coined as I was thinking about this podcast. Rape, incest, and youth. These are the three themes that we get lots of emails about, that people really worry about what it means that I fantasize about this thing. Like, a lot of people fantasize about sex with aliens or with underwater creatures or in different historical times or with coworkers, but they don't worry so much about what that might mean about them as a person. These three, rape, incest, and sex with young people, really get under our skin and make us worry about our morality and maybe even our sanity. So let's unpack these three.
And just to add, so those are also really common, which I think
super common,
right? Like, it's a lot of people are thinking about these things and worrying about themselves.
Yeah, and we're not all insane or immoral people. So let's just start there. Fantasizing about these three things does not make you a bad person. Acting on some of these things is maybe against the law, could lead to very bad situations, maybe isn't the best idea. Like, some of our cultural taboos aren't just about shame, they're about maintaining social structure. So the social taboo about incest is in almost every culture around the world. We've always had systems of tracking kinship in order to avoid incest because genetically it's not a great idea. And so humans noticed that really early on in our cultural structures and put up this barrier around don't procreate with your sister because it won't lead to a genetic pool that is beneficial for us all, right? Other taboos are just really around shame and arbitrary boundary that we are breaking down, and that's so much about what this podcast is doing, is breaking down those boundaries to give us bigger access to the fun of sexuality and the positivity of sexuality for us all. But some taboos are there for a reason. Anal taboo was a big thing before hygiene, like feces, before running water and soap and sanitation. Like, there's a reason maybe that people steered away from that, but now we have the tools to deal with it, so we have free access to enjoy each other's bungholes. Woohoo! The joys of modern technology. So it's interesting to look at why things are taboo. So let's break these down. Rape taboo. Rape fantasy is one of the most common fantasies for both men and women, and it has been suggested that it's actually misnamed.
We think of it as ravishment instead of rape, because I think this is one of these places where, because of sexual shame, we don't have all of the vocabulary to really delve deep into the real specifics of what people are fantasizing about. We think that people in those situations are fantasizing about being taken over, by being dominated, by being the person who is wanting to have sex with them is filled with such desire for them that they just can't wait. And that's different than rape, that has a whole other power element to it that is
right
about sexual violence. And even if this other ravishment fantasy has a lot of
roughness and physicality, it's really different
power
than sexual assault.
It's different, yeah.
Which is usually cold and calculated and sloppy and ugly and not erotic at all. As a survivor, most people aren't fantasizing about the kind of rapes that people endure as an act of sexual violence and as a crime. And so I think that in and of itself is really worth unpacking. Like, if you think you have rape fantasies, play it out. Go deep into it.
And as a fantasy.
As a fantasy, yes. Thank you. And what are the elements? What does it look like? It's probably really hot and passionate and so much desire both ways. Like, you're being ravished by someone you crave and they desire you. And it's steamy and it's like really torrid, right? Like, it's got so much energy behind it. And that is the fantasy that people have, but we misname it. And it's almost like, I don't know, like, if we called it like murder fantasy, it's like murder is such an ugly, violent word that of course we worry about it. And so if we reframe this fantasy as ravishment fantasy, all of a sudden, maybe that's something you actually do desire in your real life. And there's elements of it that you can translate into your sex life and say to your partner, I really want rougher sex. I really want you to hold me down. I really want you to come at me with a lot of desire. And let's negotiate this. How could this look in our real life? Like, what do we need to put into place that we could play this out? Right? So when we really understand our fantasies, we can unpack them, extract the elements that would work for us in real life, leave behind the things that are better as fantasy imagination only, and it benefits both our fantasy world and our real life sex life, right? So that's kind of the easy one. People desire more power, more surrender, being desired, being craved, being overwhelmed with desire until they're just flooded and they just can't hold back and rah, right? Okay.
That's like the movie kind of sex.
Yes. Right. So incest fantasy. Super common, even amongst people who don't have siblings, right? Like it comes up for people with cousins, with uncles, with parents. You know, it's, you can fantasize and have incest fantasy about really any family member. Why is this so common? Interesting question. Does it mean that you actually want incest in your family? Almost always, no. And this is what's confusing about people is they get really hot and bothered thinking about like the daddy girl fantasy or about, you know, their twin sibling who they've always had this special connection with. But they don't actually have any desire when they're sitting around the Thanksgiving table. Like, it's not translated into real life. So why do we fantasize about it? My theory on this is that it's all about kind of the familial intimacy and being known and being sexual and being desired by the people that know you best and are closest to you. And it's kind of the safety of having a sexuality within your family, within the home, which again, when we look traditionally, people used to have sex in front of each other a lot more. You had sex within kind of your small villages, and your sexuality was a little bit more integrated into your domestic life. Nowadays, it's so separated that perhaps this fantasy has emerged to kind of bridge these worlds of our sexual being and our family being. That's my theory. I haven't done a ton of reading on incest fantasy and why it's common. But what I do know is there's something sexy about the taboo of your family members and then overcoming that taboo and having a sexual encounter with a family member. Like, as a fantasy, I love your... I sometimes wish we had video podcasts because Charlotte's faces are just priceless. But you're responding to that as if, like, you're actually thinking about, like, sex with your brothers.
Yeah, it's like
You can't go there.
No, but I think that it's about intimacy and being seen. Like, what you were saying, that piece of, like, being known so deeply, being loved so deeply, being seen, and though that element is perhaps what we're craving at some sort of soul level and playing it out in our imagination through
this. What I just thought of is it's really interesting because sex with a family member by blood is considered like, ooh, that's disgusting, and how could you think about that? But when we marry someone, we make them family through marriage, and they're the person we're supposed to have sex with. Isn't there something a little weird about that? Like, sex with your spouse is sex with a family member, but we don't think about it as incest or as like, ooh, that's so weird, it's your family. Like, I don't know. There's something kind of weird about that.
I mean, we just have a lot of strange rules around sex. We really do. But I think trying to get to the core of what you are desiring, if you are having some of those desires, is really important. And trying to pass out what it is it about being known and seen and really loved for who you are in all of your, you know, all of who you are? And can you bring more of that to your relationship with a person that is sensible for you to be having sex with?
The other element of the incest fantasy that's really attractive to people, and Game of Thrones popularized this and did it really well, Cersei and Jaime Lannister are twins who are incestual, and this is a major plot line in the series. But so much of their eroticism is about their devotion to each other. I just watched a scene recently and they were like, it's always been us. It's always been you and me. It always will be you and me. And it's that like you and me forever. It's always just been us kind of thing that I think can really be hot around incest fantasy. Like, whether that's your twin or your sibling, like we've always been in this world together and we will go out together. And that is part of a romantic connection that, again, if that's really hot for you, translate that into your romantic life and use some of that language, like you and me against the world, and you can eroticize that element in your real life. I kind of love the Cersei-Jaime storyline. I will out myself. I don't have a twin in real life, sadly. Youth. This is the most terrifying. Our culture is so hysterical around pedophilia that we've actually forgotten what it means. And the question in this email revealed that when she said, if I fantasize about myself as a 14-year-old, is that one step towards pedophilia? Unless as a 14-year-old you're having sex with a much younger person, absolutely not. Pedophilia is the sexual desire for prepubescent youth. Right? I will repeat that. It is the desire for prepubescent youth, meaning under the age of puberty, which in this era is 10, 11, 12, early teens. Being sexually attracted to teenagers is not pedophilia. It's illegal to have sex with teenagers. They are under the age of consent in most states. That is different than pedophilia. And this has created so much worry for people. And I notice it. Like, I'm going to out myself. I will be on the beach and a girl will walk by in a bikini and it's like, look at that gorgeous body. It's young. It's fit. It's like, everything's tight and toned.
You're talking about like a teenager.
And she's 16. Yeah. And I'll have a moment of feeling bad about that. But the truth is, she's at the height of her sexual peak. Like, in most times and places, well, she'd already be a mother.
Yes. She's in a reproductive peak. Women, I suppose, are generally 20, 30 as their sexual peak.
Meaning her sexuality is in full bloom.
Yeah.
She's a frickin' rose. She's not a bud. Like, she is really... And boys, too. Like, there's this energy of teenage boys that can be incredibly hot. And as adults, especially, who have, like, lost touch with our youth and, like, can get nostalgic about those good old days when we were hot and horny teenagers, like... I wasted mine. I should have been, whatever. But like, it can be easy to eroticize youth because it's erotic, because it is sexual. In most cultures, they'd already be reproducing. Like, they are sexually mature humans. And we need to give ourselves permission to find that attractive while also giving ourselves the responsibility of staying away and giving them their own experiences of youth and not being predatory on that youth and not taking advantage of the power we have as older beings. You know, when I was a teenager, I had a lot of relationships with much older people. And at the time I was like, I'm sexually mature. I'm like so intelligent that they're attracted to me. And now looking back on it, no, they were taking advantage of me. And I really regret those relationships now. Like, it was an inappropriate relationship based on my own struggles as a teenager, and I was being taken advantage of, right? And so as adults, we need to be allowing ourselves to, like, find it attractive and beautiful. Like, most supermodels are, you know, in their early 20s. Like, youth is beautiful, and we can enjoy that and allow it to fuel our own erotic lives without touching it.
Or even commenting on it, right? I feel like there are a lot of older men who are saying, you're really beautiful, or your legs are really beautiful, to like a teenager is really inappropriate.
Right.
And that happens all the time. And you need to, it's okay to have those thoughts, but you need to keep that, keep your mouth shut, keep your hands away.
Even your gaze.
Even your gaze. Yeah, you could just, it's like, yeah, you need to just like experience your desire really privately.
Yeah.
And this is a complicated piece in life of like, there are all of these erotic beings around and it's okay to feel attraction, but
we're gonna do another episode on this, containing your desire.
Yeah. But learning how to really strongly have those boundaries is important. But wait, we're supposed to be talking about fantasy. So we were just talking about reality. But we're saying that it's really okay to have those experiences in your fantasy life.
Especially about your own experiences.
Yeah.
I fantasize about things I did as a teenager and as a 20-year-old. Like, they're some of my peak erotic moments in my life. They were formative. They were exciting, thrilling. They will always be part of my fantasy life. And you own that experience. That is yours.
Especially a first experience is so charged. You were talking about your first 14-year-old experience. Like, the emotional experience of, like, the newness and this being initiated into this whole world. Those are yours to freely explore.
And again, notice the themes. Is it the newness that was so exciting? You can recreate that with someone you've been married to for 20 years, right? Or was there a particular element? Maybe you were outside because you were hiding from your parents. Maybe you were like hiding in the basement. Like, what are the elements that made that so exciting? And what can you extract as fodder for your desires? Like, what do you want to go across that boundary from fantasy to desire? What elements excite you the most? I mean, this youth one, it's so big. And even, I mean, I don't want to get into like real pedophilia stuff. I think that's kind of beyond this podcast. But most people, when they're concerned about pedophilia, about fantasizing about young people, they're not fantasizing about children. They're fantasizing about teenagers and young adults. Very, very different thing, a different issue altogether. So I really want to just clear that up for people.
And are we drawing the line and saying if you are fantasizing about prepubescence, that that is something to be concerned about?
Okay, so here's the question. Can sexual fantasies be a sign of mental illness?
Or just that it's over the line and not okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
They can. I don't think sexual fantasy in and of itself is ever a mental illness, but your mental illnesses can affect your sexual fantasies. And you are accountable and you are responsible to know yourself well enough to try to figure out where that line is for yourself. If in doubt, go to a therapist, especially a sex positive therapist. You can find directories of sex positive therapists online. Say your fantasies out loud and they will really quickly, you know, tell you, yeah, that's really normal and common and blah, 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 blah. Or, ooh, like, what do we need to look at here? Accountability of being able to speak things out loud, and that's one of the services we try to offer here, is just to have someone to confide in. You know, most of the emails I write start with, this is totally normal, right? And because of sexual shame in our culture, we've lost that accountability and we've lost that idea of being able to confess something out loud and get a non-judgmental, supportive response.
But if there's something you're really deeply concerned about and this conversation isn't making you feel more comfortable or is maybe making you feel like, oh, maybe what I'm thinking about is not okay, we do encourage you to go try and see somebody in person, yeah, professionally, and be like, is this okay? Or is this problematic and what can I do about it? Because right, a lot of, if you're concerned that you're going to take something into real life because your fantasy life is really strong about something that really is very, very taboo, get support. Support yourself. This is a really charged area. It's really private and that is problematic. And so find yourself somebody that you can trust, that you can, that can support you in working through this, because it's important.
Yeah. And this question about sex positivity, and it's been on my list to do a whole episode about what does it mean to be sex positive, because I think this term gets confused a lot. But it's not just about sex being uplifting and positive, right? Sex plays a lot of roles in our lives, and there are elements of sex that are scary and emotional and sad, and like sexuality spans the entire range of human emotions. So sometimes your fantasies won't be uplifting and positive, and that might be okay. You might have fantasies that scare you a little bit, but really turn you on, and you can safely go there. A lot of BDSM plays with that line between fear and arousal, and that's okay. But one of the reasons I pulled out of the BDSM community, I was very active going to sex parties and events and conferences and starting to maybe think about being a teacher in the scene. One of the reasons I pulled out is because I saw a lot of unchecked, gosh, how do I say this, like, politely? I saw people with very real mental illness issues and very real behavioral issues and trauma issues translate that into their BDSM play, right? And so being kinky, enjoying rough sex, doesn't make you a sadist. But if you're a sadist and really enjoy causing suffering in others, and you start playing with BDSM and kink, that might be really scary and problematic and lead to a lot of hurt in the real world for people. And not hurt like, ooh, this is fun and scary and kinky and I'm having a great time and I'm consenting the whole way, but real people getting really hurt and injured. And that's the scary place for me, is when we're not accountable for our own mental well-being, we're not accountable for our own behavior, and we play those things out sexually. And that's not just BDSM. This can happen in totally vanilla sex. It happens all the time, actually. Like, this is getting a little awful. But this is the line we're talking about, is sexual fantasy in and of itself is not troublesome. It's not a sign of mental illness. But if you're mentally ill, that might start playing out in your sexual fantasies. And mental illness has so much shame around it itself. Like, talk about shame in our culture and silencing in our culture. Like, being mentally ill is an illness that can be treated and managed and controlled just like any other disease. And yet so much of it goes silent, and people live with mental illness and struggle with it and don't get the treatment they need because of social taboos around it. And if it's playing out in your sex life, that could be really, really hazardous to both yourself and the people you love the most. Or innocent bystanders who you're hooking up with. And that is the troublesome part, right? So your fantasies, I think anything goes if you're a healthy, capable human being who has good boundaries and good ideas about fantasy versus reality and your behavior, and you're accountable for your behavior and you're having consensual sex. I say fantasize about whatever you want. But the bottom line is, if you are authentically questioning your mental well-being, your sanity, your ability to hold boundaries in the real world and in your real sex life, go talk to a therapist. It might just be one or two sessions where you get clear about what's what, and that might be a few $100 really well spent to take this burden away from you, or it might be the first step in getting help that you really need. So that's really an individual thing. But in general, the realm of sexual fantasies, just like action movies, just like thriller movies, it's a way we tell stories. And stories for humans have always been about exploring the whole range of the human experience, exploring the taboo, entering forbidden worlds, suspending the laws of day-to-day life and even the laws of physics in order to explore what's possible. That's a beautiful capacity we have as human beings. And let's use it. Let's fantasize more and allow it to excite us, thrill us, and create some creativity, right? Like, generate creativity in our sex lives. At its best, that's what sexual fantasy does, and it can be a really healthy, positive part of your sex life, even if you're fantasizing about things that might be a little worrisome. How's that?
I like that you talk about it as a superpower, that it is this, we have this ability to tell stories, to be creative, to create this whole world that is erotic for ourselves, that does have an impact on our body, that we can use as fuel, that we can use as a way to weave stories, to create more intimacy, more charge, and to frame it that way, and to look at it that way, and then to analyze after. And
yeah, and it looks different for some people. Some people really love the drama of fantasy, and they can get really detailed with, like, historical time periods and costumes, and, like, and some people just fantasize about a certain kind of dynamic between them and their husband, and it's a very simple fantasy, but it's still a fantasy, and it's still storytelling.
And still effective in terms of turning you on.
Yeah. And other people, like, you start getting into historical time periods and they're, like, kind of confused. And they're like, I don't even know if the horses wore armor and wait, what? Where am I? Like, they get too analytical about it. And other people are really into that. And some people are really into, like, the physicality of fantasy and can sensually imagine, like, the warm water trickling from the tropical waterfall that they're under. And other people, it's just like, just shove me up against a wall and fuck me, you know. It's like, it can be as simple or as intricate. It can have all these different dynamics, and this is why I included the guide on how to fantasize in the foreplay mastery course, because I think it's a huge part of foreplay that starts in your own sex life and starts in your day-to-day life. It can be a way of creating eroticism when you're commuting on the train, or when you're stuck in a boring business meeting, or in the grocery line. Like, you can always tap into your erotic imagination, and it stokes your sexual fire. And then you can bring it to your sex life. It has so many benefits.
But part of what we each have to do with that is explore what is fantastic, and then also explore the...
Fantastical.
And then explore the boundaries of where your comfort begins to get uncomfortable. And for you, you'll figure out, and sometimes we only learn that by getting up to that edge, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, like, that I don't feel comfortable with. I can see that that's a little bit erotic, but I'm going to stay right over this side. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so you'll find your edges, and that's also important.
Yep.
Just like with sex in real life.
Well, fantasy is not real life, and I think that's also what's interesting, right? It's all a part of it. All right.
Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com/hello, and you can leave a message and tell us your thoughts, your reflections, your own fantasies, anything you want.
We always love hearing from you. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com for the full podcast archive, pleasuremechanics.com/free to get signed up for our free mini courses where we can send you the best of our work via email straight to your inbox. And we are always here for you in fantasy, in virtual reality, and in the flesh, sort of. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure
and pleasurable fantasies.